unless something interesting is sure to happen. Well, I think you ought to tell me who you are first. Mr. Rabbit, then why did you ask the question?
Goodness, this is quite extraordinary.
Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?
But today is turning into the most curious adventure I have ever had.
Welcome to the Alice in Wonderland podcast. I'm Georgia Alice, and thank you again for joining me as I tumble down yet another rabbit hole. And I can't wait to get curious with today's guest, Reggie Bryant. So Reggie was born on a Midwest Air Force base in South Dakota, and this was home for Reggie, especially in his younger years. Growing up, Reggie often found himself as the only person of color in school, amongst friends and work, and this taught him how to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations from a very early age. Believing it was a good idea to follow his father's footsteps, Reggie joined the army after he graduated from high school. He lived abroad in Germany, and eventually he went to war in Iraq. After 7.5 years serving in the military, Reggie sought sustainable employment with no luck. This led him to some contract work, heading right back to Iraq to support the troops. When his contract in Iraq ended, he relocated to New York to pursue music production and found work as a security guard with an employment agency, eventually working his way up through the company to his current role of Corporate Strategics Operations Manager. Reggie's work serves the community by helping individuals navigate barriers to find sustainable employment. A lifelong learner, Reggie passes on his wisdom and empowers others through mentorship and coaching. So let's get curious. Welcome, Reggie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm looking forward to having a chat with you. And just for our listeners, I met Reggie early this year in Santa Cruz, and we had a brief conversation. I knew that when I met him, that this was a pretty inspirational young man that I had right in front of me. So I'm really looking forward to diving into some of your story and some of the things that you've been up to. But before we get into that, Reggie, I have a standard question that I ask all of my guests on my podcast. And I'm going to ask you this question as well. Don't be scared. It's not too hard.
Okay.
I want you to just imagine that I'm 7-year-old Alice from Alice in Wonderland. And I'm walking through New York, because that's where you are, the Wonderland of New York. And I bump into you. And I ask you who you are and what is it that you do. How would you explain what you do, what your passion and your purpose is to a 7-year-old child?
Well, I would probably tell you that I am a lifelong learner, right? I love to ask questions to the universe, and I love to find the responses in those, right? So I'm a creative, right? I love music, I love photography, and I use those skills as well in my current position that I'm in, right, to innovate and to kind of propel our organization forward. I also have a background in technology as well, and so I use those skills as well to assist with some of that innovation. But basically, in a nutshell, I love helping people. You know what I mean? I love mentoring people, guiding people, and allowing them to see who they truly are. You know what I mean? I think really getting somebody to navigate that and understand who they are, remove the ego from that, and find their truest self, I think that's so important. And then see their true potential, you know.
Yeah, beautiful. And I think that shines through in the work you do and the things that you're really passionate about. So one of the reasons I wanted to chat to you, Reggie, was some of the work that I've been seeing you doing. We are connected on social media and noticing some of the things that you've been doing to help, I guess, wake people up to some of the things that are going on in the world at the moment. And One of the things that I found really inspiring was your call to people to stand up in the current, I'm going to use the word, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement that's happening at the moment. Can you tell us a little bit more around that and your place in that as well? What's going on there?
We're already in the midst of COVID and we're kind of in this remote environment, and it's already a struggling time for many of us trying to deal with not being able to have people interaction, you know, and see your loved ones. And then we continuously start to see Black and brown people being killed by the people that were designed to protect and serve us. And so when you start to notice these injustices, and these have been occurring for years, many, many years, but it was for some reason, this was just different. It hit different. And I think one of my posts was, when I saw the photo of the cop with his knee on George Floyd's neck, that right there was a symbolism of what America looked like to me at that time. Right. And when you look at that cop's face, he had no regret, no remorse, didn't care if he was breathing or not. And you have this man who cannot move. That's a very emotional moment. Right. And so when you look at that and when you identify that as the America that I live in, the America that I fought for, that's hurtful, you know? And so at that point, you know, I think that was when I just had enough, right? I think there gets to be a point when you cause a person enough pain that they will eventually use that pain and anger to do something, right? And so, What I started to realize is that, you know, I immediately have to take a stand on this because enough was enough. And the goal was to disrupt the conversation. No more could I go to work and they're just business as usual. I have to disrupt the conversation. No more can I sit with my friends who are not Black nor brown and it's business as usual. I have to disrupt the conversation. Right. And the same went for social media and any group that I was affiliated with. Right. That was my job. Right. And so anywhere that we weren't talking about it, I had to speak up and open about it. Even on our social media platform for the organization I belong to, they weren't talking about it. And I did a post in there. And that was on Monday morning before I had my manager's meeting. And then during our manager's meeting, I remember that it was just a few days. I had just been overwhelmed with so much emotion. And, you know, oftentimes when that happens, I think about my parents who are no longer with me, who recently passed away in the past 2 to 3 years. And, you know, I was just like, I could not stop crying. And it was just uncontrollable. And some days were just difficult to show up to work, you know? And so I was like, I don't have to leave part of me at home. You know what I mean? I think there's oftentimes where we as Black and brown people, we feel like we can't bring our whole selves to work. And so I think that was the day that I just committed to coming to work and bringing my whole self with me, you know. And through our manager's meeting, we typically go around and talk about what we're gonna be doing for that day, right? And so when it got to me, you know, I spoke about what I was gonna do for the day. And that day I was going to reach out to the CEO of our organization and I was gonna ask if he had time to meet and talk to him about what's going on and find out what our organization was going to do to support. Because our organization is pretty much 60-70% Black and brown, right? That's our staff, right? And the communities that we serve also the Black and Brown communities as well, right? And so we hadn't heard anything from our organization as of yet, right? And so needless to say, I think that what I said was felt. And immediately after that, there was a message from our organization that was sent out to all the staff. And then I was able to have a meeting with the CEO later on that afternoon to engage in conversation and ask him, you know, what are we going to do as an organization to support the staff members who are going through this, right? And also to support our community. And, you know, oftentimes people don't have an answer if they're not living it. You know what I mean? You know, when, if you look around your neighborhood and all that you see is white people, and you hardly have any Black or Brown people in your environment, you're not going to be able to relate. It's a bubble that you're going to be in, right? There's times when you get to walk away from the TV when there's reporting about another Black or Brown person being killed at the hands of the police, right? So you can exclude yourself from that conversation, right? And so I basically had mentioned that we could possibly have a virtual meeting, right? So that way he could speak to the entire staff, right? About what's going on, our current events, right? And then also take a stance, right? About what we are committing to do and no longer tiptoe around the conversations that need to be had, which is in regards to white supremacy, racism, privilege, bias, all those things, right? And so our organization did just that. They were able to find a consultant, and she was able to lead a conversation with the entire staff in regards to that. And that was really powerful. And I was really grateful because I don't know how I would have felt otherwise, you know? It would have been a hard struggle, you know? And there's so many organizations that haven't taken a stance on these kind of issues, right? And they do have staff members that are Black and Brown that are actually going through it, trying to show up. And so I can only imagine how they might feel, you know, with their organization, right? So yeah, that's, I think that's the day where I just decided enough is enough. I can't do it no more.
So Reggie, there's so many things that you've mentioned there that I think we can have some amazing conversations around. And one of the rabbit holes I want to dive down first is around this bubble that you mentioned. So when you mentioned, you know, there are some people who live in a bubble of whiteness. So if I was to look out in my neighborhood right now, it'd be predominantly white. So for people like myself, that live in these bubbles, do you have any recommendations on how we can start to appreciate and understand more around what is the deeper systems behind all of what's going on? What sort of recommendations do you have for us?
You know, the first thing that I would like to say is that, you know, if you, first you have to understand what we're going through, right? And empathize. And in order to do that, you have to definitely have conversations with individuals like myself, right? Seek understanding. Also do your own research, right? There's been plenty of anti-racist, whiteness at work workshops, white fragility workshops that are going on just to help people kind of understand and grasp what it is that we go through, right? And the unconscious bias that's out there and the systematic racism that is in our country right now, you know? And so I think that the reading, the seeking information has to happen, right? The want, the desire needs to be there. You know what I mean? And then once you do that, then you can really thoroughly educate yourself and understand how you can support, you know? I know there was many comments that they were saying is that silence is the new racism, right? Or if you're silent, you're complicit, you know? And I don't necessarily align with those quotes, right? But people do things on their own terms, right? There's some people that are out there protesting, right? There's some people that are actually having conversations with their family and bringing this up at the dinner table, and these conversations have never been had before, and they're changing minds, right? And there's some people that will post on social media and try to educate people that way. So there's all types of ways that people can get involved and really just kind of being there as a support system.
Yeah, I love one of the things you said there is around seeking to understand. Just be, I think, curious. Curiosity is a great tool. Even Einstein mentioned that, I think, too, is a great way for us to understand and have empathy towards what's going on. Now, I know that, and for our listeners, just to understand, because our listeners are global, so you are based in America, but it's not just America that these sort of issues are prevalent as well. I know here in Australia, we still have some issues around our Indigenous culture, and there is definitely some systems in place that do not support them. So I'd love to circle back to understand more around, if you're okay with this, around some of those feelings and what you actually felt and what you have personally experienced leading up to you, you know, bringing it up with your organization. So what were some of the things, the emotions and so forth that came up for you, so that we can step into your shoes and really get to understand how this impacted you? Now, you're a successful man working in the corporate world in a great organization. You've traveled the world, yet, you know, you're not immune to what's been going on. So I'd love to know more around how this has all unfolded for you personally.
You know, growing up in the Midwest, I oftentimes found myself the only Black person in the midst of white friends, right? Or in school. When I was in elementary school, I was there with white kids and Native Americans, right? So, you know, you always get the questions, hey, can I touch your hair? You know, you get the curiosity that happens with that. Even in high school, I was like one of 12 Black kids in my high school, you know what I mean? And even back then, you experience racism, you get called names, things like that. But it wasn't until, I feel like, when I came to New York, you really start to see it, where you have to constantly, it's like when you walk into a store and you're being followed, or always concerned about being looked at as you might be trying to steal something. So then you're trying to look like you won't steal anything. I don't even know what that looks like, but you're just trying to be like as open as possible so people don't think or become suspicious. And it always affects me no matter what, even if I'm wearing a suit and I'll come into a Rite Aid or a Duane Reed or something like that. I'm always feeling like I'm being looked at, you know? It gets to the point where sometimes you confront the person as well, the security guard, like, why are you following me? You know what I mean? And that shouldn't have to happen, you know? I remember there was a time when I was at a picnic with my girlfriend and we had two folding chairs and they come in those black pouches, right? And so we were leaving the barbecue, leaving the picnic, we get on the train, get off the train, and then we start walking because we're going to go get something to eat. And so we're walking and we notice, like, oh, there's a lot of cops around here. Okay. You know, and typical New York, you see a homeless person walking across the street, jaywalking across the entire street, and you're just like, okay, maybe they're just trying to look at that person or see what's going on. And then we continue to see more cop cars just coming around and they're looking. And I'm like, okay. So we go into the restaurant, cop car drives by and he just looks in. And I'm like, I'm looking. And this is me being paranoid as well, and I'm like, babe, they're looking at us. And I was like, I wonder what's going on. And so we're in there and we make our order, and all of a sudden these cops come in and they approach me and they're just like, hey, can we see some ID? And I'm just like, yeah, what's going on? What did I do? And then I go to put my hands in my pockets and they're like, take your hands out of your pockets. You know what I mean? And so automatically I'm like defensive, right? Because I didn't do anything wrong. And then my girlfriend, she becomes very defensive as well. And so then, you know, they pat me down and everything and they get my ID and they were like, well, somebody called and made a report that fits your description that there was a person carrying a gun. And I was just like, you know, if we wouldn't have had Eric Gardner happen not too long ago before that, that would have probably been a different experience for me. You know, I know that the New York Police Department had put a lot of effort into retraining the police and the way that they do policing after the Eric Gardner incident. So I assume that that was part of that, you know, but I could have been next, you know. And if you've ever been restrained, detained, or arrested and never did anything, your immediate response is to want to resist because you didn't do anything wrong. And that was my immediate response. You know, thank God that the police that were there were rational, right? They were calm. Because I also think that as well, they didn't really understand either. They were like, well, look, you fit the description, but he's with his girlfriend, they're coming into a restaurant, like, what, like, you know, adding things up, it didn't make sense.
So Reggie,
yeah, just thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Reggie, I'm saying we as a collective don't know what it's like to experience that subtlety of having to continually defend yourself because of the color of your skin. So, you know, you're walking around almost on eggshells, even just to do the basic everyday things that we take for granted. So going into a supermarket, going into, you know, a clothes store, going anywhere, going into a restaurant, it's almost like you're a target because of the color of your skin. And that's, I can't imagine what that would feel like. I've never lived like that. And so for us to understand that this is what happens on a daily basis for you, you know, a beautiful day at a picnic, couple of chairs in bags swung over your back, mistaken as guns by the sounds of it, just going about your everyday. And for this is what I'm thinking, and I could be completely off track. Somebody has seen you walking on the streets with that chair slung over your back. They have, without knowing, an unconscious bias going through their system around the color of your skin. So without even thinking logically, automatically they think that they need to report you because this thing on your back, the color of your skin equals something that's going to become terrible, something's going to happen because of this pre-programming that they have. I have no idea how we change this. How do we, because it's really deeply systemic within belief systems. It's deeply systemic within culture, within just so many things. And you know, you were visibly upset just recalling that, because why should you go through that? Why does anyone go through that? Yeah. It's not fair and it's not just. And thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we've, as a nation, we've kind of taken the first step, which is starting to have these conversations, right? even when we had the virtual all-staff meeting, I was able to share a bit of that amongst my peers. And then we went into breakout rooms where individuals were able to share their own stories. You know what I mean? So I think we've taken the first step, which is talking about racism at work, right? And talking about it with people that we would normally avoid the conversation with because it would make them feel uncomfortable, we felt, you know? And I think we've just gotten tired of not being able to talk about it. And so now these conversations are happening. And I'm so proud of that, you know, that people are taking the time out to just kind of understand and learn about the history of white supremacy and what has gone on and kind of attempt to put themselves in our shoes. And you're starting to see a bit of it now with some of the police department starting to be paranoid anytime they go in a fast food restaurant when their food is late or they think somebody might have poisoned their food or whatever the case is, you know what I mean? And I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. I don't want anybody to feel what we continuously have to go through. And for them to go through that and just experience that for a short period of time, it is very traumatic for them. You know what I mean? You see the videos, they're clearly upset. But this has kind of become a norm for us, you know? And so the first step is having a conversation, acknowledging it, that we have a problem, right? And then the next step is, okay, so what can we begin to do about these problems? And that is through reform, right? Taking a look at the statues that we have in and around New York City, right, that probably should come down or that have come down, right? It's also taking a look at the way we name things like our syrups and pancakes and different things like that. What's the true meaning behind those? It's also taking a look at our sports team, right? And the songs that we've sang and identifying those songs or music or entertainment or products that have this unconscious bias or historic racism attached to it. You know what I mean? And removing that and doing something about that, you know? So we are beginning to do the work, but the work doesn't stop, you know?
And it's there is a lot of work, and we just don't know how heavily ingrained racism is in our culture. Like, I was doing some anti-racism training last week or the week before, just so that I could have a better understanding, because I thought, well, I really don't understand this. I need to understand before I can even talk about it. And I was going through some of the propaganda, and it was showing a clip of I think it's a museum, a propaganda museum. I don't know where it is. It's somewhere in the States. And they're going through all the different propaganda there that was actually, you know, creating racism basically, and very racist in the way that they were marketing products and so forth. And then I realized that I had a Mammy salt and pepper shaker. Now, in my house, I hadn't purchased it, but I loved that because I thought it was just a beautiful piece of, you know, a really beautiful piece of, I don't know, something for in the household. But then I looked at it and I went, that's actually racist. And I said to my partner, you know, that salt and pepper shaker we have, it's actually racist. And I think we need to get rid of it, because it's, even though we didn't buy it with that intent or anything, it actually has a far deeper meaning than what we knew. So that has to disappear from our house, from as far as I'm concerned, because I'm unwittingly supporting something that is detracting from the ultimate human experience for people of color.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's so much that we don't know that we do unconsciously, but we do it. And even me as a Black man, I understand my privilege, right? Which is the reason why I was able to use my voice and in my organization, because I knew so many people wouldn't feel comfortable talking about this and bringing it to their attention. You know what I mean? I felt confident enough, and I've developed myself well enough that I was willing to have this conversation. And I knew it was a conversation that needed to be had because a lot of my staff members were feeling the same way. And so somebody had to have this conversation. And probably others also spoke to him and talked to them about it as well. But, you know, my VP, she was so amazing. Because me and her would talk and she would just be like, you know, how can I support? You know, and you could tell that she was already doing the work to educate herself, right, and be as supportive as she possibly could. And so I really appreciated her for that, you know, because it could have been another way, you know what I mean? It could have been somebody that had just been very dismissive. Oh, you know, well, we got work to do, you know. Sorry, you know, but we got, this is business, you know. So I'm very fortunate that it went the way it did. When we talk about the system, right, and we look at the way our system has been designed, we can't look at that without going all the way back to slavery, you know. Psychological warfare is real, you know, and what they did back then was divide and conquer. You know, light skin versus dark skin, males versus females, old versus young. And that carries throughout our DNA, you know. And then you have Jim Crow, separate but equal, right? And you look at when Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, and we would assume that, oh yeah, he wanted to free the slaves because it was morally wrong. But you had these plantations, right, in the South that were messing up the economy. You had Europeans that lived in the country that could not find work. They were poor, you know what I mean? And so, what would you do? Pay one person $300 a year, or would you pay $300 for one person? And then now you get their offspring as well. You know what I mean? And so then we find ourselves in this civil war, and then the slaves are freed. And then you have Jim Crow that takes over, right? Separate but equal. Well, we still have to keep these people oppressed, right? And so now you have the SATs, right? Education, you know, we can't level the playing field and make sure that they have the same education, right? So now you have to reach a certain score to be able to enroll into certain Ivy schools and get the education that you truly want. Right. And so a lot of these tests are designed that way. And then you have the communities that we live in, right? Where even right now, if you put your zip code on a certain application to apply for a loan, you may get denied because of your zip code or where you live, right? So it's still happens, right? Mm-hmm. It still happens. But the best thing that I can do is make myself aware of it, educate myself of what the system looked like, how it was created, and what I can do for myself and for my community, right? And so that's what I've been doing lately, is just educating myself as much as I possibly can, and seeing the logic and everything. And once you begin to look at the logic in things, then you can really understand what is about to come.
Yeah. I love that you really are educating yourself, because that for me sounds like you're really funneling your emotions into something really productive, which is let me get more information so I can then be of a greater service and make a bigger difference, because now I'm not coming just from anger, I'm coming from educated emotions that can actually make it serve a greater purpose. And I think that's a beautiful way of transmuting what has been happening, you know, for so long, now transmuting that into something really positive. I want to ask you a question. This is probably something, and you may or may not be able to answer this, in relation to giving some advice to people. Now, this is not just something that happens in America. I know it happens here in Australia as well and in other countries. So if somebody is in a workforce and they're feeling like they could be a person of color, or they want to support people of color, and they're feeling like nothing is happening, do you have any words of advice or recommendation on how to potentially approach that? Because you have done it, and you've done it in a really inspiring way that has led to change within your organization. So any just little tips on what people could do to maybe start to be that drop in the ocean that starts the ripple of change in their organization?
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself, I had to take a look at the work that we do, right? And who is involved in that work. That really helped me come forward, as well as manage the stories that I tell myself and stick to the facts. You know, what I mean by that is just, well, look, 60, 70% of our staff are Black and brown, right? That is real. The communities that we serve, Black and brown. Right, those we have to support our staff, not only our staff, but we also have to support our community, right? And it's just addressing the conversation with using the facts. And not every organization is going to look like my organization or do the same things that my organization does. So then you have to really find out why is it important for you to bring this to the organization. And really know who you're going to be speaking with, right? And so when I told you earlier about me having these conversations of challenging some of my friends and some of my colleagues on some of the stuff that they were posting, this was me practicing these conversations and understanding what was going to come up and noticing the patterns in those conversations, right? And so once you begin to notice those patterns that come up with white people that you're engaging around this conversation, then you can get ahead of the conversation and be able to respond and not react to the comments that they're making, right? And be able to seek understanding and demonstrate your listening, right? And as you're listening, you can then ask the appropriate questions, right? And you can get them to really start to understand why they should. Right. And I've done that on plenty of occasions, right, where I'm not coming out of anger, right? I'm just, hey, can you elaborate more about what you meant when you said this or when you posted that? You know, and just making statements and just remaining on the facts will reveal a lot, and people will just open up and start talking. Sometimes they'll contradict themselves. Sometimes they'll pull up their evidence, the justification for their stance on certain things, and their evidence may not be appropriate, right? Or their evidence may be just stories that they're telling themselves. But the goal is to remain focused on the motive, right? The outcome, right? And stay on that topic, because in those conversations, what I find out is that oftentimes they try to deviate from the actual goal, which is me trying to seek the understanding and find out what their purpose behind that was, and they'll take the conversation totally left. And so this is something I actually teach people, is how to have these crucial conversations and stay on topic, you know, because we can get into a tit-for-tat conversation all day long, and we'll just be talking in circles. Mm. That's what always happens. But you have to stay on the topic and the goal of the conversation. And I think that once you are able to do that, then you can really hear each other out, like both demonstrate that you're listening to each other and really kind of begin to compromise, right? And so even so, I took a diversity, inclusion, and belonging course recently. And even in that, right, even if you can get a person to just watch a video or read a book, right, then they can begin to understand on their own, right? So it doesn't even have to be you delivering the message to them. Maybe it's somebody that they know, that they respect, right, where their values align, that they can present that message to them as well, right? Because what we understand is that the reason why people resist things is because values don't align. We don't have anything in common, right? And so you have to begin to build rapport, you have to align values, and then people will begin to want to listen to you and hear what you have to say.
Yeah, beautiful. So there's quite a number of takeaways there for anyone wanting to open up the conversation in their workforce. It's first of all, get really clear on your own message and why, and find the facts. And also understand the other person's point of view, which is empathy, showing empathy back to them and where they may be coming from as well. So it's some really, really great tips and tools there. And especially around the last thing that you mentioned there is around understanding the conversation and being able to bring it back on point, because yeah, people do digress and sometimes they don't do it deliberately and sometimes they're doing it just because that's the flow of the conversation. One thing you mentioned, and I think this piqued my interest, was around you started to notice patterns. Can you expand a little bit more around the patterns that you were noticing in conversations and what, how that helped you come up with your own repertoire of questioning and seeking to understand?
Yeah, so as I was having these conversations, and these would basically be conversations where I was challenging somebody's post, right? They might post something that was designed to be kind of a subliminal message. Maybe it was like an All Lives Matter type post, or, hey, well, you guys are all Black Lives Matter, but you're not concerned with this Black deputy who was murdered by looters, or whatever the case was, right? And in that post might be some insensitive comment that they made where they talked about, oh, well, this person doesn't have a funeral. They're not talking about this person's funeral, but yet we have this televised funeral of a 5-time convicted felon, in referring to George Floyd. And, you know, I would engage that conversation and just be like, well, since you post this, are you agreeing with the insensitive comments in regards to George Floyd's funeral? You know, I'm trying to understand what you're trying to do here, you know, and I'm meaning on the facts. And so in response to that, people will get defensive because now I'm challenging them. Who am I to challenge you, right? And so the patterns that I start to notice is that they will bring forth evidence. They will find either famous Black people that align with their agenda, what they're trying to say, and they will include that in their messaging. Or they will include Bible scriptures in their messaging. They will talk about their biracial kids, right? That gives them a right to speak about the Black experience or what they've done in the past, majored in civil rights and different things like this. And they feel like, well, that gives me justification to be able to take a stance on, or not to take a stance on certain topics, right? Or I have Black friends, so I could not be racist, right? Because I've had Black friends growing up. You know, I can only imagine, and I was talking to somebody about this earlier today, is that I'm probably the topic of conversation to many of my white friends that I grew up down the street with. I had a couple best friends that I grew up down the block with. And it's weird, something always happens, right? We were best friends, and then we get a certain age and go into high school, we start losing contact, right? And so I remember some of my
Hey, how's everything going? And they would be very vague, and sometimes they wouldn't really respond. And then we would just kind of drift apart, you know what I mean? And when you look at that, you know, I know one of my friends, he went to a private Catholic school. And so there was probably less Black or brown people, right? And so he started learning things differently. And then my other friend is,
you know, it's just kind of interesting to see that. But I'm probably a topic of their conversation when they're trying to battle somebody as well. They're probably saying, well, look, I had a friend, my best friend, he was Black growing up. I can't be racist, you know? But that's the patterns that we start to see, is that you see the evidence that starts to come up, and then you see the deflection, right? Mm. And they try to deter the conversation somewhere else, right? But I always like to remain focused on the facts and what they said, and I'll respond to everything that they said.
It's interesting what you say there around, you know, people trying to prove to themselves, I think, and justify that they're not racist, where I know for myself, even though I've had people call me colorblind because, you know, and I think that's lovely because they think that I just accept everyone for who they are. However, I know that there are times when I will have that unconscious bias prejudge situations and people. I know that happens because that's deeply ingrained within me from my upbringing. And I've had to battle that to move through it. Like, I have to do that. And it's not an easy task. And yeah, I could see myself potentially going, oh yeah, but I grew up with, you know, we had a friend at home who was, we used to hang out with, who was our, one of the stolen generations here in Australia. And, but that doesn't mean I'm not racist. It doesn't mean that I don't have some of those unconscious biases running through me, which I know I have had in the past. It's not because I wanted to. It's not because it was just ignorance, and it was also not knowing that I had this deep-seated program that was putting a lens on people of color.
Yeah.
And I still had to try and fight that. It's not easy, even when you have an understanding and you know what's happening. It's really hard. I notice that. I notice with, because of my upbringing, it might be someone in a hijab, it might be this, because the media puts all these things into our heads around different races and different cultures, that it becomes the first lens that we look through. And it takes work for us to take that lens off.
Yeah.
As well. So,
you're absolutely right. We have to do the work. We have to commit to doing the work. I mean, there's work that I have to do as well, you know. After taking some of those courses the other day, it was just like eye-opening. And I'm like, okay, so as an organization, we're committed to being more inclusive now, right? So what does that look like? Mm. And that's a lot of work that we're going to have to do, because we have to be inclusive in our messaging, right? You know, when... when you're getting in front of a group of individuals, you have to know who you're speaking to, right? And you have to speak in a way that they're going to understand that message that you're going to say, right? And so also being considerate about culture, gender, right? All those things, right? And do the work to educate ourselves further in that. You know, it's crazy because I have some coworkers who often reminding me, as well as others, that, hey, well, what about, how is it going to look for our community? How is it going to look for this? Or how is it going to look for that? And I have to keep on reminding myself, yes, we have to really think about that, right? Because the work that we do is human-centered, mm-hmm. right? And so many organizations are not human-centered, right? But they service humans. You know what I mean? So I also took a human-centered design course recently as well. And so that's something that I'm also committed to driving our organization to, is that human-centered design approach. I think that is so important. And the only way that you can become human-centered is diving in, empathizing with the population that you serve, knowing who you serve, right? Committing to doing focus groups, case studies, asking questions, just finding out about their day-to-day life, right? And then designing something that's around that. Mm. You know, there's so many times that we think we know what everybody needs, right? And this goes to leadership as well, right? When you're managing people, you're leading people, oftentimes we think that we know what the right thing to do is, right? Oh no, we're good. I'm gonna make the decision. And then oftentimes what happens is that especially if you don't have trust established, then you run into issues where your staff aren't doing what you need them to do, right? There's this resistance that takes place. And then you as a manager begin to resort to tactics like yelling and screaming and firing people, right? Because you are not being inclusive, you know? So definitely something that we're trying to accomplish now, and I'm committed to moving towards, as well as, you know, establishing platforms that staff members can actually speak openly and discuss current events that we're going through, and just being able to understand how to have these kind of conversations, right? Because oftentimes we'll run into individuals who become very aggressive or angry, you know, and we get referred to as the angry Black man, angry Black woman, right? And oftentimes it's just the passion that's there, you know what I mean? So that, again, is us not being able to bring our whole self to the conversation, right? Where we have to learn how to articulate differently in order to be accepted and to be able to engage in a dialogue where now you are willing to listen to me and hear me. You know what I mean?
Reggie, there's a lot of unlearning, because you're talking about learning, but I think there's a hell of a lot of unlearning we need to do as well, collectively, not just white people, not just brown and Black people. I think as a human race, for us to become more human-centered, we've got a hell of a lot of unlearning to do, and then to learn more and become more curious about the lives of others. And I love that you touched on leadership there as well. And around a lot of us thinking as leaders that we know best, when really we only know best when we are curious and understand those we're leading. And I think that's a really brilliant point for any leaders that are listening. So as we start to round out our conversation, I think you and I could talk for a very long time, because it's a really hot topic at the moment, but I don't want it to be a hot topic. I really want this to be a way that we can move into a more human-centered existence as a race of human beings on this planet. I think it would be awesome, and I think we can continue these conversations and really make a big difference in the world. And even if it's just in our small sphere of our community or our family, I think there's room for change here. But as we round it out, do you have any thoughts, burning messages, advice, anything you'd like to leave our listeners with today? Any sort of message or anything you'd like specifically that we may not have covered, or anything you'd like to reiterate that you have covered today?
Yeah, I think we have to learn how to communicate. You know, I think we've reached this era where we text message each other. You know, we don't really get on the phone anymore. We just shoot text messages. It's shorthand. I've received messages even from therapists where they use all caps and exclamation points. And I'm like, are you yelling at me? You know, you know. And so what we have to begin doing is teaching our youth how to have conversations, right? It's a skill. It's like, if I'm being verbally attacked, right, which I've done security before, where as you can imagine, where somebody is just like coming at me and saying, who the heck are you? Da, 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 da. And I have to realize that that's not, that I detach myself from that, right? And then continue to engage them and just look at the underlying message that's there, right? I remember, I'll leave you with this. I had a young lady that came into our office, and she was upset and wanted to speak to a career advisor. And I'm in my little office, and I'm over here in the conversation. And she's like, I need to speak to you, da 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 da. And they were like, no, time's over. We can't see anybody right now. We're on lunch. And so the security guard comes over there, and he's like, look, they're not going to see you. They have a certain process. And she's still upset. So I get up, and I come out, and I'm saying, "It's like, excuse me, ma'am. Is there something I can help you with? I don't want to talk to you." And right then and there, you have a decision to make. You can either let your ego take control, right? And you can say, well, then you need to get out of here, or you need to leave, or whatever the case is. Or you could be aware and have the emotional intelligence to know that something is wrong. And so I asked her, would you like to talk in private? And she calmed down immediately. And she's like, okay. And we went into office. And I was like, what's going on? What's wrong? And we began to talk. And as I began to seek and understand, you know, she told me that her nephew was murdered a week ago. You know, and she hadn't fully recovered from that. You know, and so you never really truly know or understand what the individual is actually going through. And we have to learn how to have better conversations, because it's, you know, the aggression is not towards you. It's about their circumstance. It's about the situations that they're going through. But we have to care enough to listen to what they aren't saying. You know, that's what we have to do better at.
Thank you, Reggie. And I concur and agree with that. I truly believe that our conversations aren't meaningful enough in most instances. We're very quick to judge. We're very quick to react without taking a moment to pause and respond to situations and approach people with loving kindness and curiosity. So thank you so much for that beautiful reminder. If our listeners would like to reach out to you in any way to potentially have a conversation with you, is there a way they can contact you?
Yeah. Where can they find you? I'm on Instagram at Reg Bryan, REGBRYAN. Also, my email is reggiebryant@gmail.com.
Beautiful. Thank you. So for our listeners, if you're wanting to reach out and either thank Reggie for his inspiration or to get a little bit of advice and maybe even talk to him about some opportunities for some mentoring and coaching potentially as well. I don't know if that's something that you would be open to for people, but an amazing human being right here with us right now. And I think that there's a lot more going to happen in your space, Reggie. So your calmness and your serenity in the eye of the storm is absolutely amazing. And thank you for sharing your story, your insights. And I'm sure this won't be the last time we speak. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much for allowing me to share my story and having me here. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure.
Today is turning into the most curious adventure I've ever had.